I welcome you to another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word and invite you to return to 1 Chronicles chapter 13. We'll start at verse 6. And remember that we have parallels between the Chronicles and Samuel now. So 2 Samuel chapter 6 is also source material for us. We are in the 8th year of King David. We know that David reigned at Hebron for 7.5 years. And then he moved his capital to Jerusalem. Jerusalem had always been a Canaanite city during the history of Israel being in the land. And so David, I believe, understood that it would be the perfect place for all Israelis to identify with, since no one tribe ever controlled this particular city. And taking it, as strong a city as it was, would be a unifying experience by itself. Plus, it had history connected for the Israelis, since this is where Melchizedek had blessed their ancestor Abraham all those centuries previous. So after taking the city intact by sneaking in a strike force through one of the water flows out of the city, David decides he needs to bring the Ark of God's Covenant to the new capital. God, the King of Israel, should have his throne at the capital city of Israel. And so everybody agrees with him. That's a good idea. Let's do it. 1 Chronicles 13:6. David and all Israel went up to Baalah, that is, to Kiriath Yearim, that belongs to Judah. It's about 8 miles west, northwest from Jerusalem. And so it's going to definitely be less than a day trip. It has the name Baalah because at this time in Israeli history, they commonly used the Canaanite word Baal, as a synonym for Adonai, because they both mean Lord, and they used it to refer to God. So because the Ark of the Covenant stayed at Kiriath Yearim for such a long time, they referred to the city as the Lord's City. Baalah, the Lord's city. And so that's where they go, and they're going there to bring it up, the Ark of the Covenant, the Ark of God, which is called by the name of He who is, who sits enthroned above the caravan. So you have to picture the Ark of the Covenant as a sedan chair. Don't put the carrying poles on the long side. It's not a decorated box. It's a sedan chair. It is a throne. So these carrying poles go along the short sides. The two cherubim go up on each side of the Ark of the Covenant. One pair of their wings for each of the two go up and over the seat to form a canopy over the seat of God. And so God is symbolically represented as seated upon that throne. And his voice, when it speaks, is spoken from between those four-faced, four-winged angelic beings. So they should have simply had some of their priests carry it by the carrying poles that 8 or so miles from Baalah to David's new palace there on the north end of the city of David. But they didn't. Verse 7, they carried the Ark of God on a new cart from the house of Abinadab, and Uzzah and Ahio were driving the cart. David and all Israel were celebrating before God with all their might, with song and lyres and harps and tambourines and cymbals and trumpets. So it was a grand parade. Lots and lots of people, lots and lots of music, lots and lots of smiles and laughter and happiness. But somewhere along the way, it says, when they came to the threshing floor of Gidon, Uzzah put out his hand to take hold of the ark, for the oxen stumbled. It's not supposed to be up on this cart, but it is. And so Uzzah happens to be on the side that the ark tips toward when the oxen take a stumble. The moment his hand touches the golden side of God's throne, he is struck dead by God's fire. The anger of He Who Is was kindled against Uzzah, and he struck him down because he put out his hand to the ark, and he died there before God. And the party was over. Instead, we are told that David was angry because He Who Is had broken out against Uzzah. David couldn't believe that God would strike this man dead on such a special day. But the reality is, the ark was not being carried the way it was supposed to be carried. They were not showing proper respect for the throne of God. And everything that happened after making that choice just made it worse. And so even though Uzzah may have had good intention, he was probably just being reflexive anyway, it was the fault of those who were breaking God's standards, God's rules. There is sin in the camp. And so David becomes angry at God immediately because he can't believe things have turned out this way. They give the place a special name. They name it Perez Uzzah. To this day, Perez means to break out, and Uzzah, of course, is the name of the guy. So it's God breaking out against Uzzah. Then verse 12 tells us that David was afraid of God that day, which that is definitely to be expected. He kind of processes from anger to suddenly being afraid that they did wrong. They screwed up. And so David says, how can I bring the ark of God home to me? So if God is going to be this way and execute somebody for not following the rules for keeping, you know, the holiness of his ark, then how in the world can I bring God's throne into my palace? So David did not take the ark home into the city of David, but he took it aside to the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite. So some guy who is apparently from the city of Gath, that doesn't guarantee that he's not an Israeli by birth, but he is apparently somebody special enough, trustworthy enough, that David says, why don't we park the ark at your place? And you keep it, you know, properly secured, and you make sure that you show respect for God with it. There's every indication that Obed-Edom is probably a Levite himself, okay? And so we are told in verse 14, that the ark of God remained with the household of Obed-Edom in his house 3 months. And he who is blessed the household of Obed-Edom and all that he had. So we're going to let the Ark of the Covenant be there at the place of Obed-Edom for a bit. We'll talk about something else that happens during this very busy time of 1010 BC, the 8th year of King David on the throne, and that is that David is gifted a palace. And we're right here in Chronicles, so let's see what it says. 1 Chronicles 14, Hiram, king of Tyre, sent messengers to David. Now, Tyre, or Tyre, is up the coast from Israel. very famous Phoenician cities, Tyre and Sidon. And they were well known as shipbuilders, sea traders, and the builders of big and important buildings. So the moment that David takes the city of Jerusalem, he kind of proves himself as being the up-and-coming big shot of the lower Middle East. And so the king of the upper Middle East, Hiram, the king of Tyre, sends messengers to David along with cedar trees. Remember, the cedars of Lebanon are world famous for being very large and fragrant and special. He also sent masons and carpenters to build a house for him. So Hiram gifts David with a brand new palace, or an upgrade from the palace that already existed at Jebus, for David to live in. And so David knew at this point, we're told in verse 2, that he who is had established him as king over Israel, and that his kingdom was highly exalted for the sake of his people Israel. So that is one of the things that David looked at and said, now, it's kind of looking like God is blessing us as a kingdom. He gave us the city of Jerusalem, and now he's giving me a palace in the city of Jerusalem. And so things are looking up. Verse 3 starts telling the later story of David, so I'm not going to camp here very long. David took more wives in Jerusalem, and David fathered more sons and daughters. So we already knew that David had more than one wife. Once he was king, he takes more wives. This is the practice of the Middle East. It was something that God warned against back in the time of Moses writing down the laws. But unfortunately, David doesn't listen. This is a fair critique of him. His son will do even worse in this area and get himself into even greater trouble. But we just need to be aware of this aspect of David's life as we move forward. Now, what else is happening while David is, you know, waiting for things to calm down about the breaking out of God against Uzzah and the gift of this new palace building, and he's got people working on that? Well, something else happens. This comes from 2 Samuel chapter number 5, and we're going to go to verse number 17. It says this: when the Philistines heard that David had been anointed king over Israel. Now, as I've told you before, I don't think we can be absolutely certain how soon after the death of Ishbaal, and before him, Abner, that David became the king over United Israel. The civil war lasted 2 years. It was from 1017 to 1015 BC. So David may have been declared king pretty quickly. He might have been king in 1015, although I think it more likely that people in northern Israeli tribes would have been still pretty upset about the assassinations, and so there may have been some foot dragging. So David may not have become king until 1014, 1013. But even after he became king, we have a sabbatical year that pops in here. So David is not making big changes amongst the Israelis right off the bat, other than becoming king over United Israel. But the moment he takes the city of Jerusalem, that's a very big deal. The city of Jerusalem had been in Canaanite hands since the early period of Israel being in the land, so for several hundred years. And so I believe the moment he took that city without a fight, really, took it intact and made it his capital city, and started to move things there to indicate it was his capital city, I think that's when the Philistines went, uh-oh, okay, we need to do something about this guy, because it looks to us like he's now going to start eradicating non-Israelis from his kingdom that don't bow the knee to him. And then it won't be very long before he starts moving his boundaries out farther. And the Philistines, I think, were probably well aware that the Israeli story was that all of the Promised Land belonged to the Israelis. So I think the Philistines may have begun to think that David was going to be a king that tried to expand Israel to its proper boundary lines, and that included all of their territory. So I think they decided to strike first. So when they heard that David had been anointed king over Israel, all the Philistines went up to search for David. David heard of it. He went down to the stronghold. Now, the last time that we referred to the stronghold, it was down in the wilderness area to the east side of Hebron. But before that, the stronghold was also attached to the idea of the cave of Adullam, which is more toward the Philistine territory. So I'm thinking that the stronghold here is likely to be toward Philistine territory, that effectively when David heard that the Philistines were marching eastward into Judea territory, and probably coming through some of the wadis, through some of the river valleys, he took off down to the Elah Valley so that he'd be ready to launch against them. And so the Cave of Adullam is right there at the Elah Valley. But what ends up happening is the Philistines passed by the Elah Valley. They came up and spread out in the Valley of Rephaim. Now, we know where the Valley of Rephaim is. It is a valley of approach to the city of Jerusalem. If you think of the city of Jerusalem having a valley on the south side, which is called the Hinnom Valley, and then a valley on the east side that's called the Kidron Valley, the Valley of Rephaim, the Valley of the Giants, comes off the extreme western side of the Hinnom Valley and goes at an angle to the southwest. And it goes right past the western corner of Benjamite territory. And so it almost seems as if the Philistines are putting a blockade in the Valley of Rephaim so that they can go against the city of Bethlehem, where David was born, but also they can go up against the city of Jerusalem, which he has just now taken for himself, and he's counting it as his new city of David. So that seems to be the military situation. David's response is very good. It says David inquired of he who is. All the other times we've seen this, it means that he called for the high priest to bring the high priest ephod with the pocket where the Urim and the Thummim is located to ask God yes or no, either or questions as to how to proceed next. So David is asking God, what am I supposed to do? Shall I go up against the Philistines? Will you give them into my hand? Two-parter. He who is said to David, yes, go up. Yes, I will certainly give the Philistines into your hand. So he gets a double yes answer to his question. So David came to a place that's going to be called Baal Perazim. It's not called that yet. He defeated them there. And he said, He who is has broken through my enemies before me like a breaking flood. And therefore, the name of that place is called Baal Perazim. And so again, we see here the common usage of a Canaanite noun, Baal, for Lord, as a substitute for Adonai and as a reference to he who is. And so David says, this is the place where God broke out against these Philistines, which is interesting because, you know, shortly before this, God broke out against Uzzah. So the word breakout is getting used a couple of different places here in these stories. Verse 21, we're told that the Philistines left their idols there and David and his men carried them away. So they get beat and David picks up the plunder, all the stuff left behind, and some of the stuff included idols made of precious metals. And so David captures those, and I'm guessing he probably would have melted them down rather than keeping them. At this point, I'd like to bounce over to 1 Chronicles 11, verse 15, to tell a story that I think happens right around this time. Because it says in 1 Chronicles 11, 15, three of the 30 chief men of David's army, these are the top commanders, went down to the rock to David at the cave of Adullam when the army of the Philistines was encamped in the valley of Rephaim. David was then in the stronghold. So this kind of matches what we were just reading about and the next military story right after it. And so I think this is likely to be in 10:10. Now we're told furthermore that the garrison of the Philistines was then at Bethlehem. So we have a detachment of Philistine soldiers that have bounced a few miles over to Bethlehem from their encampment in the valley of Rephaim. David is apprised of this reality, and it frustrates him. And he verbalizes something out loud. Verse 17, David said longingly, "Oh, that someone would give me water to drink from the well of Bethlehem that is by the gate." Now, it's probably been a while since David's been at Bethlehem, because he's been king at Hebron for 7.5 years, and then he's just now become king over all the Israelis and has now moved his capital city to Jerusalem. So he is not focused on his nativity town. But the moment he finds out that it's kind of being overrun by the enemy, he says, "Wow, I wished I could get a drink from that well by the gate." Well, guess what? Verse 18. Three mighty men broke through the camp of the Philistines. They drew water out of the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate. They took it and they brought it to David. So three of his best guys, his best fighters, decide that they will grant him his verbalized wish. And they go down and they fight their way in to Bethlehem, get the water, and bring it back. Now that's pretty amazing. And that's why it's listed here in this 1 Chronicles chapter 11 passage, because this is all about some of the brave acts of David's fighting force. But some people get troubled by what it reports next in the text. It says, "But David would not drink it. He poured it out to he who is." And some people are like, "Wow, I can't believe that after they risked their lives, he just dumped it out on the ground. He didn't drink it. How insulting." No, quit thinking like a modern Westerner. You have to get into the mindset of these folks. What David does is he uses this water in worship to God. Because he says, I am not worthy to drink something that people risk their lives for. Only God can have that sort of sacrifice. So David wouldn't drink it. He poured it out to He Who Is and said, far be it from me before my God that I should do this. Shall I drink the lifeblood of these men? For at the risk of their lives, they brought it. Therefore, he would not drink it. He gave it to God instead. These things did the three mighty men. And so these guys were probably honored by David giving this water as a sacrificial gift to the God whom they serve as well. Last bit of stuff that we have, let's go back to 2 Samuel chapter 6. And I think that's where we're at. Actually, we're not there. My apologies. What we'll have to do is marker places, I think, where we want to go into next. And that is, we will go to 2 Samuel chapter number 5. 2 Samuel chapter 5, 22. The Philistines came up yet again and spread out in the valley of Rephaim. And so what happens is, apparently, later in that same fighting season, the Philistines make a second incursion because they didn't get what they wanted the first time because David fought them off. So they make a second incursion, and David and his men have to deal with it a second time. But that will be left until the next time we can get into God's Word.